Hey Zed Heads, welcome to the podcast. I'm Jason.
And I'm Eric.
And I'm Ben.
And this is the Cast of Us episode 503.
And in this episode, we're going through your feedback for The Last of Us Season 1, Episode 2, Infected.
And we got, again, tons of feedback, which I'm really happy about. I guess I can't be too surprised since that episode was pretty awesome. Before we get, we have a little bit of news too. Before we get into that, I have one sort of theory, because I love how they've been doing these cold opens to sort of expand on the origins of this whole thing. And, you know, people are saying, oh, I hope that they keep doing that. And I was thinking what they might do instead of just go deeper and deeper into the origins is keep doing a series of cold opens that explore the 20-year gap.
That would be pretty cool.
Wouldn't that be cool to show just a few years in how things really fell apart and how the military took over and stuff like that? I kind of hope they do that.
Yeah, I mean, that would definitely, I mean, just seeing the cold open of this one, I was very hopeful by the end of it. I was like, man, I hope they keep doing that throughout the course of these episodes.
Yeah.
I think that makes sense, like you mentioned, just to kind of give us a little bit of insight as to what happened. Because it did, 20 years later is a major time jump.
So it just jumps past everything we saw in The Walking Dead, basically.
Yeah,
completely. Yeah.
And I've always said I love to see how things fell apart and stuff. So if they did show that would be pretty cool. But whatever they want to do, I mean, freaking awesome show so far. All right, let's get into the news. Just a couple of things. One thing, as of last night, if you pull out your phone and Google The Last of Us, there'll be a little mushroom at the bottom, and if you tap that, something kind of horrific happens. So
that's starting on Sunday.
If you keep tapping, it gets worse and worse.
Oh, is it really?
Worse.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it'll fill your whole screen with mushrooms.
Don't do it, people. Next, in an interview with BBC, Bella Ramsey said, "If people keep watching, I think a second season is pretty likely. It's down to the guys at HBO. There's nothing confirmed yet, so we'll have to wait and see." That pretty much comes under the banner of not news and just totally obvious, but I thought it was fun to read anyways.
For sure.
Well, I mean, when you look at the numbers that the show is producing, I think a second season is a no-brainer.
You would think so. I mean, the only thing that would make me question that is that HBO is insane lately. But
yeah, this is also true.
I mean, I heard a rumor. Did I hear it from? I forget who I heard this from. That they may actually drop the HBO name.
I think it was rumored a while ago that they were going to change it to like Warner. Everything was going to be under the Warner Discovery label at some point in the future.
Because the new execs don't think Prestige TV numbers are good enough or something like that. I'm like, don't take away the HBO-ness of it all.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, this goes back to, like, motels back in the day when We Have HBO was a thing. I mean, that's, like, a big deal,
Yeah, and HBO still has cachet. I mean, even if the financials don't line up, it's just good to have that in your stable, I would say, to have that brand. Anyways, third and last item is that I see the titles of the episodes for Season 1 have been released, and I kind of want to read them. They're not too spoilery. Do you guys want to hear?
I don't mind at all. I mean, okay. I mean, you're talking to two other people that are kind of familiar with the game already anyway, so it's not
There's one pretty big hint for gamers when a certain thing is coming by these titles. So if you don't want to hear these titles, I'll just read them quickly. Skip about 30 seconds ahead. So the next episode, episode 3, is called Long, Long Time. I don't know what that means. Episode 4, Please Hold My Hand, which I love. Episode 5, Endure and Survive, which says absolutely nothing. Episode 6, Kin. Maybe that's a Tommy episode. Episode 7, Left Behind.
That's
the one. Episode 8, When We Are in Need. And episode 9 is called TBA. Actually, I don't think that's what it's called.
I thought for some reason I had heard that number 9, episode 9 was Look to the Light.
Oh. That'd be a good one.
Yeah, because episode 1, when you're lost in the darkness.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe it will. Yeah, that'd be cool. All right, let's move on to some listener screams, snarls, and clicks.
Click, click. I'm a zombie guy.
All right. Who wants to go first?
Before we jump into it, can I just make a quick note since I wasn't on the podcast?
Oh, absolutely. I keep, yeah. Yeah.
I kind of want to come to, just real quick, I want to come to the defense, in because I did listen to the podcast that you, Eric, and Rima did, mm-hmm. and I quickly want to come to the defense of Merle Dandridge for something that you said, Eric. Mm-hmm. You referred to her as a voice actor and compared her as a voice actor to a regular actor. She is, in fact, an actor. I mean,
oh yeah, no. I have full respect for voice actors in the nth degree. Yes, they are all actors, but
I mean, in the sense of The Last of Us, like it wasn't voice acting; it's motion capture acting. Like she was in a full body suit and doing all of that. Yeah. So,
but I was also saying, versus on screen, there is a difference when you're having to emote in a different way. You know, I get what you're saying about all that.
Yeah, I mean, in regards to like your face is generated, not actually your face, to comparing the video game to the show.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, yeah. It's just like I said, that was my one biggest complaint about episode 1 was simply some wooden acting. I mean, just to put it bluntly, you know.
I just know a number of those people, they don't kind of like being referred to as voice actors. They prefer to be referred to as motion capture.
No, and I realize that. And I was simply trying to make a finer point as to what my beef with it is.
I
of all people am most certainly not disparaging voice acting as somebody
as a
who...
Profession, yeah. She's actually been, an on-screen actor in a lot of things, too. But I think the real issue is, I thought she was fine, good. You know, I didn't think she was bad, except the only thing for me is she didn't seem hurt. And she was like, I can't take Ellie because of my condition. And yet it wasn't coming through in the performance. But other scenes with her, it's all subjective. But in my opinion, I thought she was totally fine.
No, but I mean, in regards to your point, I do agree with that as well. Like you both said, you know, you're kind of acting a little nonchalant for somebody who's supposed to be bleeding out at that point.
Point taken.
So what did you think of the episode in general?
I actually enjoyed it better than the premiere.
Yeah,
I mean,
I think I did too.
I had a blast doing the live react with Kristen and Alex, and you know, I coined the term butt puckering as far as like the tension goes in the episode. And I just rewatched, unlike the premiere that I watched 4 times, I just rewatched episode 2 for the second time last night, and I still tensed up even though I've played the game and already seen the episode. There are still particular moments, especially when you first interact with the clickers, that I was like, yeah. They built the tension right in this episode.
Yep. All right. Eric, you want to go first?
All right. Barbie Allen says, damn, I really like Tess. What a way to go.
Yeah, I think I went on the HBO Facebook page for The Last of Us, and I saw someone had posted, okay, I'm not a game player, and can someone please tell me if I should just be ready to have my heart broken every episode?
Yes.
Not every episode. Ben.
Penny Lennox, episode 1 was good. Episode 2 was fantastic. I'm all in.
Yeah, it'll be interesting now to see people who weren't totally for sure on episode 1. I bet you this one drew most of them in. Bianx Vargas says, whoa, I wasn't ready for the infected in the museum at all.
Good. Teague Mateel. I hope I said that somewhat correctly. Why did she make out with those spindle thingies? It was gross. Blah.
Why would she do that? She was lonely. that's Teej.
Sherry Mofort. They are too hard to kill. That was freaking terrifying.
That's good. I'm glad they're hard to kill. Erica Price says, dumb question, but if this is spread by flour, why doesn't cooking kill it? I think it's a pretty good question, and I don't have an answer.
Me neither.
A wizard did it. Ron Zember, some more butterflies at the beginning of episode 2. I think Lucy is onto something here.
Yeah, you guys talked a little bit about that in the last episode too, I know.
Mm-hmm.
Davolino Bob Grippy, love the clickers. The cinematography is awesome. Plants and plant life overrunning everything.
Yeah, love it. Lynn Strickland Anderson says, wow, that was awesome. One of the most tense TV experiences I've had in a long time. I'm hooked. That's really saying something. They're amping up the tension like that. So good.
Yeah.
Kristen Crabtree says, that was scary. This is wood. Such an intense episode. I love the city scenes of Boston. Amazing. Also love the flashbacks of the origins.
Mm-hmm.
Brad Holt. After seeing this episode, I'd have to agree with the folks who say that these creatures are not zombies. They do draw from zombie lore, but these are pure monsters.
No comment.
It's appropriate that Eric and I are the ones that are on the episode for that bit of
Arnold,
feedback.
Where's Arnold? He's probably saying they're not zombies too. James Brickhouse said, I started playing the game for the first time the week before episode 1, loving the show. Episode 2 scene with the clickers had me shook and holding my breath. Can't wait for next week. Amazing.
Kristen Halberg, hello. I'm loving the origin stories in the opening the last 2 weeks. Exploring the backstory of the fungus is really interesting and well done. I really hope that continues through the season.
Yeah, me too.
Michael
Acosta. There's good and there's bad. The good, the whole damn episode. The bad, this excruciating long wait to the next episode. Bring on Bill. I'm excited to see his backstory unfold. I am too. I really am.
Yeah. I don't know if that counts
as... I think everybody is.
...as good and bad when the bad is just that you have to wait for more good.
It's bad. I don't want to wait either.
Lisa Edmondson Walker says, holy crap, that was intense. So those are the clickers. Almost impossible to kill, scary fast, and connected from far away. It's going to take a while to unclench after each episode. That's amazing.
Teresa Harper, this was an amazing episode. I love the intensity of it. I was filled with anxiety and anticipation. The clickers were intense and scary. This episode, in my opinion, was as good, if not better, than the first.
Yeah, I think
seems to be a running theme.
I think I might have liked it better, but I mean, the first set a high bar, so they were both great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Mark McBurney. Well, that was just fantastic. Intense and a little terrifying. My wife is a non-gamer and going into this completely blind, so seeing her get freaked out by those clickers was incredibly satisfying and a little funny.
Yeah, it's great to watch it with someone who doesn't really know. I've been watching with Nico and sometimes Jenny, and he's seen me play the game a little bit, but he doesn't really know it all that well. So super satisfying.
Yeah, I've been watching with my mom, who's not familiar with the game or anything either, and it's fun watching her reaction.
Is she digging it
as well? Oh, she's loving it. Yeah. She's loving it.
She's a horror person.
She's into somewhat horror, but like into sci-fi and just like she's into like Marvel and all that stuff. So yeah, she's really enjoying the series so far.
That's cool. David Welch says, I'm really enjoying the show so far. The makeup for the clickers was fantastic. It really was. I like the twist that the infected are joined by the fungus and that one small touch will alert them to that location. A strong second episode.
Indeed. Bradley Morgan writes, when Ellie went to go play in the hotel, it made me giggle because of how she just wanders off in the game like that. And you can hear her messing around with all this new stuff in the world that she has never seen before.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's such a great scene.
Yeah,
I thought about that too, how she just kind of wanders off while you're playing and you just hear her having conversations by herself.
Mm-hmm.
At certain points.
Yeah, yeah. And just kind of humming or something or just sort of.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very good.
Nice little nod to the character in the
Absolutely.
Game. Absolutely. Gijo Puthia. It was sort of a slow burn at first, but what an amazing payoff. The clickers did not disappoint. When it was over, I realized I was not breathing. Rest in peace, Tess. Her sacrifice hopefully will save the world.
We talked a lot about how the clickers just how they made us feel and how they looked and how they acted, but we didn't really spend much time talking about how we think they got that way. And to me, it just, I mean, we had just heard Joel say some had been around for 20 years. And so I just think this is a mature, this is just how they mature if they can last that long.
Yeah.
Is that what you guys think? I mean, we don't really know for sure.
No, that's exactly what I took from it. Yeah. If conditions are right and they're in a nice, cool, damp place, they're going to grow some more mushrooms, right. You know?
Yeah. It almost feels like if you could just strap one down, you could go over and just peel a chunk off and eat it. I like mushrooms.
Well, sauteed cordyceps. yeah. Oh, but actually that is funny. I will mention that we've decided for every episode in my family, we are going to eat a mushroom based.
Awesome.
Something mushroomy for Sunday nights.
I love it.
The first week I made some ribs with some sauteed mushrooms. This week was a mushroom sauce pasta. I got to think about what to do for this week.
Mushroom sales are going to go up right along with copies of The Last of Us on PS4.
Yeah, perhaps.
I think so, because I've seen other people eat mushrooms too. And also, I've been inundated with ads on YouTube, because I'm a big YouTube fan, for this mud water, it sounds gross, but it's a replacement for coffee and it's mushroom based. And it actually has cordyceps in it. I almost ordered some last night, but it's fucking $40. So,
I tried some of the cordyceps stuff and it was rancid.
Really?
And really gross. Yeah. I couldn't joke.
Did you start twitching?
It's horrible.
No. Okay.
No, I don't.
You guys are braver souls than I am.
I like mushrooms.
Well, also, what's one thing I know, so speaking about all the cool damp place, I mean, when Joel goes to, you know, hit that one bit of cordyceps branch with his butt of his gun, right, and it's all dried out. Well, that was right in the sun. I wonder. No, I know it was just dead, but I kind of wonder, does it dry out in the sun?
Oh, yeah. Right. Yeah, maybe
they are mushrooms.
What did he say about? They said it was. I think he said it. He said some conclusion about it that it was old. Or
hopefully this means they're all dead inside.
Yeah,
I think he said. Oh, okay. I was gonna say. I think he said burned up. Was the terms that he used, but I don't know.
When he got inside and he saw the people in there, he said they were all burned up. Yeah.
I just hope that they can be consistent with the rules. Another thing we didn't talk all that much about was in episode one when they came upon that one that was just kind of stuck to the wall.
Yeah.
And I was like, how did that happen? You know, like if they become clickers when they get old, then how did this happen? So I hope they have some explanation for that that makes sense within the world of the show. I'm not going to worry about it too much, but you know. Nah. Mofavo says, new Tess wasn't in every episode, but didn't think we'd see her death in episode two. For once, I'm rooting for flashbacks to get more Tess. I feel like we might get that, which leads to questions of how well do you get to know her in the game? They don't jump around in the game, do they? As gamers, how much do you love getting backstory? Those are all great questions. You get to know her about the same amount, I would say. I mean, you play a little more because you're around her during gameplay, but I don't know, you're just killing things.
Not much. I mean, it's really equal.
Yeah, probably about the same. But I love getting the backstory as a gamer.
Me too. Yeah.
Okay, Janice Michelle. This is such a beautifully made show in every way. Even the gross is somehow gorgeous. The lighting in the episode was sublime. I loved at the end that Tess's words to Joel snapped him into action. I'm so in love with these characters already and sad to lose one. Ah, the wait each week is going to be hard. Too hard.
Yeah. Yeah, it's good that people are sad to lose Tess, as sadistic as that sounds. It just means that the show is really moving us, and when you feel attached to characters, that's good. My opinion.
Yeah. And I love too, they kind of made mention to this on the official podcast with Troy Baker, but introducing the save who you could save element.
Yeah,
which
I like
is
that.
Some of Tessa's last words to Joel, which I thought was just fantastic.
And it felt like they had talked about that before, maybe, and that just sort of snapped him out of inaction. You know, he knows what that means and knows what to do. Like, yep. That's where we are right now. We got to go.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you think about their lives as smugglers, that's almost what they were doing already, trying to bring, I mean, they were bringing in drugs too, but I'm sure they were bringing other stuff for
them. Well, it works for drugs, like save the drugs you can when the cops show up, you know, flush the rest kind of thing.
No, they weren't smuggling chickens. We know that much.
I guess not you guys. Mona Trowell. This episode was intense. The clickers are scary, but for me, the way they have the infected connected to each other and their coordinated movements is just gross. The scenery is amazing. Excited for upcoming episodes. Also loving the live reaction shows.
Nice.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
That was a lot.
If you don't know, we go to the Podcastica YouTube channel right after the episode airs and we'll have the live reaction with other Podcastica people, or various, I should say.
I think Alex didn't realize how in over his head he was having me and Kristen on together at the same time. but it was still fun.
He said the coordinated movements, or she, sorry, Mona, said the coordinated movements are gross. And that really does add something disturbing that was not in the game. The whole tendril-y thing coming from the mouths and the connectedness and all that. It's a new aspect that is deliciously gross. Maria Pereira Granada says, I was tense the entire episode for Tess since I realized that the show is about Ellie and Joel. I hate to lose her. My son is really enjoying the show because it feels like a video game. He's played it before, but not all of it. I told him not to give me spoilers.
And Jeff Lee Pagano, regarding the premiere, great pod, guys. Probably not the first to say this, but I will anyway. I noticed the date of the Jakarta outbreak is September 22nd, 2003, 1 year to the day before Oceanic Flight 15 crash and lost. And yes, part of me does hate myself for noticing that.
I love it.
As a huge fan of Lost, still to this day.
Yeah.
As somebody who's currently podcasting on Lost, it's Flight 815. Just make a minor correction.
Yeah.
But I never picked up on the date being that close to the Lost date. That's a fun fact.
Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if that was intentional, because Lost is really in this lineage of shows that led up to this kind of a thing.
Yeah.
I decided to try out sprinkling some calls within the messages here. So they're in three parts. So we have a few calls to get to, then we'll get back to the messages, go back to calls. So first we have Claire.
Hi, guys. This is Claire from Colorado, leaving feedback for episode 2 of The Last of Us. I didn't call in the last few episodes of Walking Dead. Honestly, it was just so emotional and I had too much to say, so I wound up not saying anything. But I was there with you guys, listened to all the amazing podcasting you did. And so thank you for the ride with Walking Dead. And, I'm excited to get into The Last of Us. I loved the pilot and, loved the second episode too. I don't think the pilot quite matched up with The Walking Dead's pilot. I think I like that one a little bit more. But episode 2, oh my gosh, really good. I loved the flashback, and I hope they continue to do more flashbacks. I'm like Jason. I love the early on confusion and just uncertainty of it all, and the freshness of what's going on and the chaos of that. So I hope they continue to do more flashbacks. I thought The Walking Dead would have benefited from more flashbacks. They did a lot earlier, but then not so much in later seasons. And I have to say, the set pieces for this episode were astonishing. Like, the CG and the set design was breathtaking and jaw-dropping. Like, I don't think I've ever seen anything like that on the big or small screen. But it was just kind of a beautiful dystopian cityscape that I thought that was probably the best part of the whole episode, was just walking through the city with them and seeing what they were seeing. And I love looking at old web pages and pictures of abandoned places. And so made me feel like that. It was great. That's all I have to say for now. Can't wait to get into the cast of Us. I'm right there with you guys. And here's my new zombie growl for a new show. Okay, God bless. Don't get bit.
I can almost picture, like, pointing your finger at me while she's doing it.
Finger guns along with
yeah,
it.
Yeah. Claire's a longtime listener. She actually guested with us a couple times when we covered Better Call Saul, and she was great, and it's good to hear from you. Yeah, I kind of missed you at the end of The Walking Dead here, but glad you're back. I also love that abandoned build. I hadn't even thought about that, but if you can go on YouTube and see people, like, exploring old abandoned theaters and malls and things like that. And it's very much the same feel as The Last of Us.
Yeah. I mean, that was really my only gripe with the second episode, is that we didn't get to see inside those skyscrapers.
I know.
But, I was still more than pleased with the episode, so I'm okay with it.
Absolutely. Yeah. All right. Now we have Robin Springer.
And y'all, it's Robin, talking about The Last of Us episode 2. I have to say, I was absolutely sick with anxiety and dread during the entire episode. Right from the beginning in Jakarta with the doctor, the professor discovering what was wrong and what was happening, and all the way through the whole episode, it was such a level of tension that I haven't felt in such a long time. And the camera kept showing their Joel and Ellie's and Tess's feet as they walked, and it's like, what are they going to step on? And then they stepped down into that water, and the skeleton was bad enough, but I kept thinking, oh my God, what is in that water? And then when they're over the balcony looking, I expected one of the infected to look up and have all of them just swarm the side of that building, you know, a la World War Z. Luckily, I watched the museum. I watched the whole thing in the morning, because I would not have been able to sleep after if I had watched it at night. That was one of the wildest, scariest fight scenes in the dark that I've ever seen in my life. And then, of course, Joel finally did step on something. And it's just the whole level of tension was wild. I knew that Tess had been hit, had been bitten when she sat by herself on the roof for a minute when the whole thing was over and she snapped at Joel. I thought, well, she's a goner. And I knew she would be, but I didn't expect it to be so soon. I read this morning that there was some viewer dislike about the difference between her death in the game and her death in the show, but I have to say that kiss of death and watching her begin to shake and try to light the lighter more and more slowly as she, you know, tried to save Joel and Ellie, that will stay with me for a very, very long time. I'm loving Ellie. I love her. I was that girl when I was 14, with the exception that the word, you know, fuck wasn't as ubiquitously used then as it is now. I was the kid who snuck out. I was the kid who always had a smart answer. And I think that's one of the reasons that I liked Rosita so much, is because I think she was that girl too. So I'm just loving Ellie. And I did want to mention from last week, the difference between Sarah's reaction when Joel killed the old lady and she cried, and Ellie's reaction when he killed the soldier. You know, this is probably really obvious, but I haven't heard anybody mention it. You know, Sarah was literally waking up in the middle of the night to the end of the world, and he killed a little lady that she knew and had been around for a long time, and the horror was really just dawning on her, and she really didn't understand and couldn't figure it out, and she'd never seen that side of her father before, even though we know he was a veteran and had been in war. And Ellie, of course, she grew up in that world. So, you know, and didn't ever have anybody to take care of her and to do something that drastic to save her. So I felt like the whole thing was pretty, I don't know what the word is, but it made sense to me that they reacted the way they did. Anyway, I know I've gone long. Thank you so much for the podcast. I'm going to listen later. Talk to you guys later. Bye.
Yeah, that's a good point about Sarah versus Ellie's reaction. I mean, basically, we're just saying they have different personalities, and your personality is the result of, to some degree, your genetics and also your environments. And they've definitely had different environments, you know.
Yeah, that was something I think that I was the one that brought that up in the last episode. And it was more to make a point of how it was used as a way to separate Sarah from Ellie.
Yeah,
so that it didn't seem
show them
like
as different.
This was, to show them as different, different people. Mm-hmm. And very quickly, in regards to the hotel scene, Rima had me laughing while I was listening to the episode, about breaking down the episode, when she mentioned, come on, guys, there's a safe in there. Because that was a nice little Easter. Because I thought about
just
the same thing.
Go around the corner.
Yeah, I was like, go around the corner, there's a safe hidden.
It struck me, you know, as Robin was talking about how tense this was, and other people have said so too. I bet you, because a lot of people came to The Walking Dead who aren't horror fans, and their friends are like, no, I think you're going to like this. It's about the characters, and drew them in. And now I think a lot of people who were Walking Dead fans are like, okay, let's watch the next thing. I liked that. You know, the Podcastica people say it's similar, but this is much more horrific in a lot of ways. So I just feel like these shows are drawing non-horror fans into this world, and they're not used to seeing this kind of thing as much as we horror fans are, you know? Mm-hmm. So it might be more of a shock to some people. I don't know if Robin, if you're a horror fan, but that's just a theory I have. And then last call for this group of calls is from May Almardini.
Hello, Podcastica team. This is May. I'm calling in with some feedback about episode 2 for The Last of Us. First, I want to say thank you so much. You guys are doing such an amazing job, and I love listening to you and your feedback about all the different shows that you podcast about. And the way you interact with the listeners is just absolutely fantastic. I had left some feedback on Facebook, but I decided after listening to your podcast, I had some more to say. So I thought this is the time that I'm going to be calling in and saying what I thought about it. What I really like about the show is that they use real science to explain the infection, so it makes it sound plausible. But just like the best lies have some truth to them, the best fiction has some real science that backs it up. I agree with the previous caller that mentioned that there are antifungals for different types of fungi out there, but I think it would be more believable for me if they said, you know, it's resistant rather than there is no cure, but that is just being really nitpicky with the science. I think the scientists saying just bomb everyone is a little bit extreme, but I guess there's not enough time to kind of go through, yeah, we tried to find a cure and it didn't work. So I started thinking of what would be a good way to cure this fungus if it happened in real life. I work with a lot of companies that do cell and gene therapy, and right now so what some companies do is they actually make viruses that can target specific cancer cells. And if somebody has cancer, they can go in and kill that cancer. So I thought this is a great way to kill this fungus is sequence it and make a virus, program it to go in and kill the fungus. So I guess, Jason, you can tell Nico that this won't happen. I found the cure. And it would be really hard for a human to actually function the way these zombies are or infected people are functioning. They would die first, but maybe that's not much better. Anyway, I think just like we found a vaccine really quickly for COVID, we would do the same thing for this fungus. I'm hopeful. And yeah, keep doing what you guys are doing. You guys are awesome. Have a great one.
That was great. May's written in on a lot of shows. I think that was her first call. That was great. Thank you for calling in. Nice. Clearly she's a knowledgeable person, and I kind of love it that you're so confident. Like, I would want you there if this really happened. I'll tell Nico, I think it's going to make him feel better. But I think she's right that instead of saying, having the scientists say, oh, we should explore a cure, and just instead having like the guy at the beginning of the first episode and also the scientist at the beginning of the second episode just be like, oh, fuck, no, there's no cure. It just feels more dramatic. But when you really think about it, I think most scientists would be open to the idea of trying, you know? They wouldn't just be like, oh, there's nothing we can do. Bomb it.
They probably wouldn't write it off so quickly.
Yeah. Science isn't like that, right? You don't know how you're going to solve something, but you try.
Yeah.
Well, that's optimistic of you guys.
Eric works in a lab, so.
Yeah. I think you're overestimating the ability of people to not be human.
I just think they want it to be extra dramatic. So they're like, oh, the expert says we're fucked. Oh, no.
But, yeah, I mean, this is something that is, you know, turning people into monsters within minutes. You know, it's not
pretty bad. It's not a rash or something.
No.
I mean, there is a rash involved, you know, but there's other stuff.
Yeah, it's a little more immediate. I think that's the whole point of the, you know, you say the scientist is being overly dramatic by saying bomb. Well, I would say she's clearly was under dramatic Because,
no, I don't mean by saying bomb necessarily, but I mean by saying
not
there's
you.
No
you,
vaccine.
The caller was saying.
Okay,
that,
but
she thought that was extra dramatic to say that a scientist would not just say bomb.
Oh, okay.
I'm saying it clearly wasn't over dramatic because it didn't work.
Yeah. I don't know.
The whole world is gone.
Yeah. I think her point is more about, well, maybe I'm projecting my own thoughts onto it, but about just saying there's no vaccine, like there's nothing that can be done, you know? Like with COVID, you know, we didn't have a vaccine, but they're like, well, we better get to work and figure this thing out.
Yeah. I agree with that. I'm just saying, I don't think they had time.
I could see Eric's point on that too. Like you're talking about
something.
It's different
to say, oh, we don't have time to do this quickly versus what they did say, which is there's nothing we can do. We can't make a vaccine for this. Basically, that's what I got out of the show. And I think that the writers did that because they want us to feel like,
Sure.
There's
sure.
nothing can be done. But then it is part of the plot that they're still trying 20 years later. You know, that's the whole point of Ellie.
True.
Anyway, yeah. Good discussion. Let's move on.
Let's move on.
I think it's Benton, your turn.
All right. Patrick Hamburg. They're so fast. Hard getting used to after years of walkers. Intense, though. Much better than the first episode, which was a bit jumpy. Note to actresses. Don't expect a long run in this show unless your part is Ellie.
Yeah, there aren't any actresses.
Well, I mean,
Marlene's not dead.
We have Marlene, yeah, and Marlene's not dead. So
as far as we saw. Marie Lawson says, so much tension. I didn't play the game, but I really like the interconnected tendrils idea, similar to the Vecna vines in the Upside Down. Oh yeah, good call. The clickers were both terrifying and beautifully done with those amazing prosthetics. That last kiss for Tess in the museum, though, is going to haunt my nightmares.
Hey, Evan Brookman. I knew I would both like and simultaneously hate this show. I mean, sure, it's pretty great, and I suspect we'll get better still, but it's still more gut-wrenching, heart-crushing, pulse-pounding, episodic TV. Count 'em 9 episodes this season, 1/3 in the bag next week, then the wait will begin anew. I'm old, not sure how much I can take. How much more I can take, excuse me. That's funny, Evan.
Yeah, I thought too. I've been thinking about that. We're going to, and I hope we don't have to wait longer than a year, but shows these days, you never know.
Hey, I mean, how long did they make us wait for seasons of Game of Thrones?
A long time.
Yeah. So let's not think about that right now.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, another one from Gijo Puthia.
Hey, he's double dipping over here.
Oh, I didn't notice that. Well.
Been thinking, maybe the fungus is the next level of evolution. Stay with me. Humans are destroying the planet, and if we assimilate with the fungus, we can be in harmony with the Earth again. I think I'm being influenced by the movie The Girl with All the Gifts, and I would not like to surrender my humanity, but being one with the fungus is eco-friendly. Thoughts? Yeah, I'm on the same boat that I don't know if I'd like to give up my humanity just to be eco-friendly.
I mean, if you really want to get into it, you know, humans have evolved with our emotions and capability of joy and suffering because those things lead us to move towards things that are safe and healthy and move away from things that aren't so that our species will grow. But nature doesn't care about that as a whole. And if we were taken over by a fungus, it would probably be better for the planet and for nature as a whole, but not so great for humanity.
I mean, that would basically just make The Last of Us The Happening.
I don't think I saw that.
And we saw how great of a movie that was.
I thoroughly like that movie, actually, in a, oh my God, I love how bad this movie is. Everybody run. It's the wind.
Is that Shyamalan?
Yeah, it's M. Night Shyamalan.
Mark Wahlberg?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, yeah, that year, I believe the AV Club in their like, Oscars things for the year had the most wooden performance was either Mark Wahlberg in The Happening or the tree in The Happening with a swing on it, and Wahlberg won.
Yeah.
Everybody be quiet, let me think. I'm a science teacher.
Oh my God. Justin Phillips says, super tense and really well done. Jill stepping on the glass in the museum was so frightening. The visuals in this were incredible. The world just looks so real in such a creepy way. It's so cool seeing everything overgrown and covered in vegetation and falling apart. Yeah, it's like someone said, terrifying and beautiful, and also just like the ruins are so beautiful. The show's so beautiful in a sad way. Vegetation and falling apart, especially outside of the QZ. And that clicker basically Frenching Tess before she blew them all away was really unsettling. Yes, it was.
Alex Burris writes, the set design was so amazing. All the little details really make it pop. And I love the cold open. I think it helps flesh out the lore and makes the situation not feel that far up. Gulp. Do you think they will continue the flashback cold open structure? What other flashbacks would you like to see in this season? I'd love to see more of Ellie and Joel's past, but glimpses of the early outbreak in different countries would be cool too.
Absolutely. You know, that's what I was saying, and I probably stole it from Alex. I think these ideas are my own, and then I read the feedback.
I'm kind of going into this with, now that we're getting this little bits of something new from the game, it excites me because I'm like, I'm not even going to try to guess what they're going to give to us because we know a couple things just from what we've seen or but I love coming into this like, oh, I don't know.
Yeah.
I have no clue how episode 3 is going to start.
It's giving us an experience of something new because, that's cool. It also reminds me of the occasional episode of Lost that would start like underwater or in a coffee shop or something. And it's like, well, what the hell is going on here? Antarctica or something.
I mean, if there was any one thing I'd like to see from flashbacks, I'm just very curious, the same as Ellie, how Joel got from Texas to Boston, because it's never explained in the game either. So
yeah, I want to see that. And maybe the fact that she asked is an indication that we will get to see some of that.
Yeah, that's what I'm hoping.
Perhaps,
that you mention it.
Gail Cleary. Well, that was the scariest game of Blind Man's Bluff I've ever seen. I'm impressed that Ellie didn't lose her shit, because I totally would have. I'm really sad that we are losing Tess so soon. I like the direction they are taking with the backstory and love the scientist from Jakarta. I hope they keep threading the timelines like that. Also, really cool to see the fungus as one gigantic super organism. This episode seems so short. Can't wait for next week.
It was still an hour. The first episode was like an hour 20. Yeah. This was like 55 minutes. But I heard next week's is a little longer. That's what Remo was saying, an hour 16 or something like that.
Yeah,
and it really does move. The pacing just keeps it moving so quickly that by the end of it, you're like, that's it?
I know.
Come on, I need the next one. And that's why gamers start at 10 p.m. and suddenly find themselves going, why is it 3? I just started.
Yes.
I looked in my last playthrough of the PS5 version of Part 1 was 20 hours. That's how bad I am at this game. Alma Contreras said, so I had a question. When that doctor was checking out the dead infected lady, how is it that she was dead but the fungus tentacles were still alive? I got to tell you all this. Well, let's answer that. Because they're creepy.
I also don't think that just because the human body dies, it means the fungus dies.
Yeah. It's a fungus.
It's a fungus. The body was just the vessel.
Feed on the flesh and everything. Yeah, mm-hmm. It just can't move the body because the brain's dead is what I would say as a non-scientist.
Yeah, that's what I think too.
She goes on, I got to tell you all, this whole premise of a fungus pandemic terrifies me. From all the biology classes I've taken, the fungus kingdom contains some of the deadliest species. I'm not surprised the clickers are so hard to kill. What do you guys think? I think the clickers kick ass.
Yeah. I mean, this is, I think it is fun to explore this whole, as she just said, a kingdom. It's an entire kingdom that we've kind of like ignore in our life, except for some nice gourmet meals and the occasional, you know.
And it's so different to see, and the occasional psychedelic you were about to say, right? to see like the mushroomy, like it's like H.R. Geiger got a hold of some shrooms or something, you know what I mean? The creativity of how they meld mushrooms with people. It's really cool.
Well, who is it? Who's the guy who the book right now? The dude who wrote The Omnivore's Dilemma.
Michael Pollan?
Michael Pollan. Yeah. He's got a book right now about mushrooms or just the way that discovery of eating things. And with mushrooms, it's this funny thing. Like, you know, how did people figure out, okay, you eat this mushroom, it kills you, this mushroom, it's tasty, and this one's going to make you see God for a week.
Yeah. Trial and error.
Discovery process of that and trial and error. It's fascinating. It comes to mushrooms.
I got to check that out. Yeah.
Okay. Next one here is from Sean. Hello again, commanders of the Zedhead army. Oh, my. I love the contrast between the show and the game. The suspense of the museum sequence was nearly identical to the game on the first playthrough. Also, the mycelium growing into the ground feels almost similar to the Na'vi link to Awa in Avatar. Okay. Also, could you go a bit more into the global warming aspects of the fungus mutations? I didn't quite pick up on that whilst watching. Thank you for the great coverage. God, you know, I haven't seen Avatar in ages, that first one, but I do remember that, I suppose.
The global warming thing was just that they were saying mushrooms can't, or fungus can't survive at human body temperature, but they were saying they may evolve to survive at hotter temperatures if the earth warmed. And so that's the implication, that the earth has warmed because of global warming that caused the cordyceps to evolve to be able to survive at greater temperatures, which then allowed them to meld with humans.
Mm-hmm. And John Hanna mentions that in the first episode, and the second episode, the scientist in Jakarta makes it, or the mycologist says it can't survive at human temperatures, and well, or in the human, but because of the temperature, and here we go.
Yep. Yeah.
Okay. Gabby Jade, awesome episode. Never played the game, so I'm just reacting to the show. Last week, the podcast, you all mentioned the knife Sarah had. To me, it just points out the difference between her and Ellie. Sarah is very hesitant with it, and Ellie is much more comfortable. Loved the way they made the infected react in a tandem outside the buildings. It starts with one and just ripples the effect. Looked great. Can't wait for next week. Yeah, I brought up Sarah's knife, and I didn't understand the relevance of that. But then when I rewatched the episode again after we podcasted, she doesn't take it. She literally just looks at it and then puts it back in the drawer.
Yeah.
And it's Joel's knife. It's when it's when she's stealing his money out of the drawer. Just looks at it. It just happens to have pretty horses on it.
But Gabby, you said that really perfectly. I hadn't considered it. Now in this second episode, we see Ellie flipping the switchblade. And I think you're absolutely right. And I just want to say, I love when listeners hear something we said and write in with this little kind of a nugget of information that sheds light on it. Great job.
I understand. I read a little bit yesterday, actually, that it was Bella Ramsey's idea to have Ellie sleeping with the switchblade that first night with Joel and Tess.
Makes sense. They won't let her have a gun.
She can just toss a sandwich at him. She'll be fine.
That's right.
Stop me. That sandwich looked great.
I know. I'd take a bite first, at least. Ginger Martinez says, top moment, Tess's kiss. Absolutely horrifying, yet I couldn't look away. Goose flesh everywhere. Gameplay status in the middle of chapter 3, so not even to the museum yet. It's a tough game, but fortunately my son is helping, aka basically playing it for me. One question, do we know why some humans become petrified fungus, like the guy in the wall in episode 1, and others become runners, which I assume is the first stage of infection? I don't know why. That's what I am curious about and hope they actually have an answer for. Yeah. I think if you were a wallflower in life, then you may stick to a wall.
Oh, well, that means I won't be a runner then in this post-apocalyptic.
All right, here a letter from May Almardini. Fantastic episode. I'm really getting into the show now. I had a feeling we were going to lose Tess, but I don't know how. That last infection kiss was chilling. This time, my boyfriend kept turning to me and saying, this wasn't in the game. LOL. I'm liking the openings of the episode. I hope we get more of that. But that scientist really just went to bomb everyone straight up.
Beth Nichols. Okay, a few thoughts as I'm watching episode 2. Number 1, those things are terrifying. I don't think I ever felt as scared with the walkers. 2, they should have taken Tessa's pack with her supplies when they left her. 3, I really like this actor who's playing Ellie. They're doing an amazing job, and the chemistry between them and Pedro Pascal is excellent. Lastly, I'm surprised no one said anything about the child we see at the beginning of 2023 part last week. Was anyone else shouting, little girl, at their TV, or was it just me? Is that a reference to something? Because I know we definitely talked about the child.
Yeah, I don't know what that means. Let us know, Beth.
Yeah, I don't know if that's a reference to something we're missing or not.
I agree. They probably should have just grabbed the pack because at least they could get her jerky.
Yeah.
Out of there.
That's why they left it.
Yeah.
Joel's like, oh, I'm out of food. I need a sandwich.
That's right. Des Combe says, I didn't send a comment last week because I didn't want to be negative. I loved the 1968 and 2003 scenes, but once I got to 2023, frankly, I was bored. I could see that. The second episode pulled me right back in. The scenery was beautiful. The creatures were terrifying and the suspense was killing me. The view of the infected mass on the ground below, insane. I don't know if anyone has mentioned it, but it was funny. They started out in Jakarta. Apparently, they had a marketing event in Jakarta where they were trying to get people to use the mass transit with a simulated zombie infestation. That is amazing.
I don't know how that would get me onto a mass transit, but quite the opposite.
It's not too different around here. Wouldn't even notice.
Okay, Andy from West Bromwich, UK. Hi, all. Just wanted to drop a couple of recommendations that aren't The Mummy for people digging John Hannah, although The Mummy is a great adventure romp. My movie choice would be Four Weddings and a Funeral, funny and moving all at one. The biggest surprise for me was 2010 Spartacus, Blood and Sand TV series. Hannah should have gotten an award for his scheming, privileged character portrayal in this overlooked series. I will mention another John Hannah movie that gets no love, Sliding Doors, with Gwyneth Paltrow before she was hated, before Goop. It's actually, I enjoy the movie, and it's the whole point of the movie is, you know, two different realities of her life, and it kind of splits off at one point, and you see how she would live if she stayed with the guy versus if she left the guy, and John Hannah's the charming fellow who asks, you know what the Python boys always say, never expect the Spanish Inquisition. So I love that movie.
I like that movie too.
So it's early multiverse work.
Yeah, it really
exactly.
Is.
It kind of is early multiverse work, very much so. And Pepper Potts is, you know, in it.
Kate Harvey, I hold my hands up. I've not watched yet. Well, I watched a bit yesterday on the first step of the first episode and got very emotional. I'm feeling weird about the whole thing. I'm excited to watch, but I'm also apprehensive, and I have to and hate to admit that I'm feeling very precious about it all. I'm possibly going to sound really pathetic. In fact, I can't express it correctly, but I don't like sharing Joel and Ellie. I know, I wish I could explain it more eloquently, but I'm finding it hard, stupid, and I'm sure I'll get over it. I'll call in as soon as I can get over myself.
That's an amazing message. I've never heard anything like that before. Kate has been like one of the listeners online who's been the most excited for this for years. You know, she always had things to say about the game. And when the TV show was announced, she's like, I can't wait. I'm like, you got to call in as soon as it comes on. So now that it's on, well, I don't know. What advice would you give her?
Get over yourself. No,
get over yourself.
I kind of understand the whole like not wanting to share Joel and Ellie, because if you connect that strongly with a game, you feel a personal connection with those characters, even though they're not real. So to now have the rest of the world kind of embracing those characters at the same time, when you were one of the first ones to do it, I can kind of understand that. I personally felt the same way about like David Tennant and Doctor Who. Because everyone else figured out he was the best. Like I was very into Doctor Who, and then all of a sudden, you know, towards the end of his tenure and into Matt Smith's tenure, everybody and their brother became a fan of Doctor Who. I was into
Chris Eccleston and Tom Baker.
But I mean, I remember going to conventions like New York Comic Con, and everybody's cosplaying like Doctor Who. Like 16-year-olds are cosplaying Doctor Who. I'm like, how many episodes have you actually seen?
But here's the thing. The Last of Us is one of the most successful games ever made. And video games are a huge business. So you're already sharing them with a lot of people. But I don't know if this is exactly what you feel, but it's different. You have to kind of, with these things, like with Walking Dead, I did too, have to come in and be like, this is going to be different. I can't expect it to be exactly the same. And I got to appreciate it for what it is. That said, as I'm talking, I realize this is pretty damn close. So, I think if you can open yourself up to it, you'll really, really dig it.
Probably. So basically what you're saying is Kate should get over herself.
Kind of, but in a loving way, because yes. Kate's great.
In a friendly way.
In a friendly way.
Yeah, I'm trying to imagine hipsterizing something like this, which is just, I liked it before it was cool. I don't, you know, I'm just like, dude, I don't, yeah.
Well, I guess with the game, you have to kind of go and actively participate in it. It's a hard game too, so you're kind of really engaging with it at a level that if you're not dedicated, then you just can't do it unless you're watching somebody else play. With a TV show, it's like, oh, let's flip around and see what's on. Oh, let's check this out, you know. So I kind of, maybe that's kind of what it is.
Well, no, like, I get it. I would be livid if they screwed it up, I suppose. Yeah, for sure. You know, I mean, but
she's just saying not. That people who aren't as dedicated as gamers are now going to get to watch this, I guess. I don't know.
I guess I just feel the complete opposite, where I'm so excited to share.
How I am.
Absolutely.
Too,
you know? Yeah, me too. Yeah. And yeah, Kate, I hope you watch it and I hope you love it and I hope you write or call back and let us know.
For sure.
Mariah Mueller says, I think I was holding my breath during the clicker scenes. Ellie's comment, well, I didn't shit my pants, had me laughing. We didn't mention that, but that was great. Tess was such a badass, creepiest death scene ever. That may be. She was so brave and somehow instinctively knew if she just froze, she would have more time to flick the lighter, and it paid off at the last second. The way Joel swallowed his grief, just heartbreaking. And that final scene of Ellie with the flag flying in the background, iconic. Enjoying this series so much. Not a game player, but did watch my daughter play about the first half of it when it first came out. Cool.
Mark Kirkman. Loved how they proceeded with the story. Been looking forward to the scene with Ellie and the ladder acting as a bridge. I really appreciated how they terminated Tess. It happened in the game, but I like what he had to move. It happened in the game, but I like that he had to move the episode further. All the scenes were amazing. The daylight shots of the city.
This is Mark.
Still, the daylight shots of the city still floors me. It's like the girl with all the gifts, visuals within my head, but put into screen. I'm loving how they are developing Joel and Ellie's companionship within the show.
Carl Lord Thunder. First time leaving feedback, but a long time listener. I promised myself I will be social this time around, so here it is. The show is amazing. It's been many years since I've played The Last of Us, and I will absolutely play it again when it arrives on PC in March. The opening music being identical to that of the video game brought back all the memories from the game. Joel's daughter dying brought tears to my eyes, and I've never cried for anything prior to this, and I'm not sure why. I'll end by saying the scene in episode 2 where the doctor is saying they will have to bomb the city, Jakarta, to contain the spread, and that she wanted to be home with her family was extremely scary, because it's not that this couldn't happen. There is a reality where this is entirely possible.
This is the first, it sounds like this is the first time Carl's ever cried for anything in his life. So that's a big deal.
No, really, I picked up on that too.
Just kidding. Yeah, it really felt like, I mean, I don't know if it could really happen, but it was effective in making my son freaked out, you know, and it just that sense of,
Carl's,
oh, shit.
A hard man.
Carl's great. I'm glad you wrote in, Carl. Keep writing.
He says, I've never cried for anything prior to this, so I'm you could be right.
Lisa Moreno says, I'm so loving this show. This is a game I've been wanting to play, but since I'm an Xbox girl, I haven't been able to play. However, I think I like the fact that I haven't played it because this is also new to me. That's a great point. This episode was hella good. The cinematography is stunning and the cast is so good. I had a jump scare when they first entered the hotel and the skeleton popped out. Why again did they need to go through the building? Because it was cool. I don't know. Anyway, I knew Tess was not long for this world based on previews, but that did suck. And talk about the worst tongue kiss ever. I can just tell this is going to be an epic ride, especially when the episode ended and I was thinking, no, not already. I can't wait for next week's. By the way, is the clicking they do some sort of echolocation? These fungals can't seem to see, so maybe that's what the clicking is for. I don't know. Either way is cool. They do mention echolocation, and they mention that they're like a bat, so I think it is supposed to be echolocation, but then why can't they see you when they click? Or you know what I mean? It doesn't seem to work very well.
Well, I mean, I did pay a little bit more attention to that this episode too. And if you notice, mm-hmm. every time they didn't realize where they were at, they were behind something. So echolocation is not it's not going to go around it. It's literally just so they can see where they're walking.
But in the game, you sneak up on them. You're right next
to
them.
You're behind them.
Oh, yeah. You can't sneak up in the front of them?
No.
You can.
Can you?
Yeah,
you
I can. Think you can. Yeah. Yeah. They can't see. The fungus covers their eyes.
So. Yeah, so the clicking, like, it doesn't... I don't know if it's supposed to be echolocation, yes.
But there are also times where they're not always clicking, too. I mean, even in this episode, there's there's a scene where the clicker ends up right next to Joel and you didn't hear it.
Yeah.
For like a couple seconds beforehand.
I think it's supposed to be echolocation, but I think
screeches are the echolocation, not the clicks.
I think
the clicks are just
I think the screeches are anger or aggression.
I was just watching X-Men First Class last night, and what's his butt? Whoever the kid is. Banshee. He's screaming. And he's able to get the, what do you call it, submarine and echolocate. Sorry.
That's a good movie.
Not the thing. Oh, guess it's me. Rebecca Cantu-Davidson. Holy hell, the suspense and fear in this episode was palpable. I will never see that museum the same again. I will see the historical stuff and picture those clickers there, too. Those things were disgusting and terrifying. I knew Tess had gotten infected when she was short with Joel about taking the win, that Ellie wasn't turning. I love the backstory and the origin of the fungi, pandemic. I love how they're applying some real science to it. Also, I don't think I will eat a mushroom ever again. Tess's kiss of death made me cover my eyes. Yuck. Overall, I love this episode so much, and even though I love Pedro Pascal as a native Texan myself, his terrible Texan accent takes me out of it a little bit. I think if he just spoke normal, it wouldn't bother me. Lots of us Texans don't quite have that stereotypical Southern drawl like he's trying to have. But I digress. I love the episode, and I can't wait for more.
That's awesome.
As a non-Texan who doesn't know the difference, I love it. I think it's perfect, and it very much sounds like Joel in the game, too, so I hope they don't change it.
Yeah, I'm with you. Andrea Hatfield Olmsted. So many game feels again. I loved the tense music that comes on in the show, like the game when there was danger. Wicked cool. I love how they showed the group of infected move and work in unison and how the fungus controls their brain function and how it alerts the other groups. Also, the beginning credits not only show the map of the United States, but Joel and Ellie's faces, too. I missed that part.
No, I didn't see that. But one thing we haven't talked about is at the end, you see the fungus grow into like humanoid figures, which is really chilling.
Yeah,
exactly. She continues, on a side note from your review, I believe when Tess had her makeout session, I believe she wanted to stay still so she could finish lighting the fire and tried to remain calm and not draw the extra attention to give Joel and Ellie their chance. Mm-hmm. Also, this one for Lucy, did anyone notice the giraffe they stepped by on the ground when they were traveling? Maybe we will see a giraffe soon. Loved the episode. Can't wait to see next week's. Yeah, you guys brought that up in the last episode, giraffe, and I completely missed it until I heard you guys mention it, and then I paid better attention the second time.
For your rewatch.
Yeah.
Thanks, Andrea. Thanks, Rebecca, too. All right. Here's another set of three calls. First, we got Jeff from Melbourne, Australia.
Hi, crew. This is Jeff from Melbourne, Australia. I started the game a little while ago and got as far as two chapters, but I stopped because I really want to enjoy the TV series as a newbie, which I'm glad I have. And wasn't this episode fucking amazing? How do you think the Walking Dead crew would have handled the zombies or the clickers? These are 10 times way scarier and worse than the Walking Dead zombies. They are way faster and clearly takes more than just one bullet or an axe blow to the head to even slow them down. Even Daryl and Carol would struggle, I reckon, against them. And how edgy and scary was it waiting till the first clicker appeared in the museum? And how super brilliant scary are they and looking amazing? And finding The Last of Us way grittier than The Walking Dead, which is good. This episode was particularly dark and scary. It was on the edge of my couch the whole time. It was so sad to lose Tess and Anna Torv. But Joel seemed to take it surprisingly well. His emotions are clearly very, clearly buried very deep. Just a couple of quick points. The sets in Boston City are amazing. I hope to travel there one day. I'm starting to see the emotional connection between Joel and Ellie developing, which is nice. Episode 1 and 2 have been top level entertainment, just amazing. And I'm hoping the rest of the series is as good as this. Love the podcast. See you guys later.
Thanks, Jeff. Bye. Aussie's like Anna Torv, that everyone from Australia always mentions her. As far as like The Walking Dead, I'm kind of wondering if the people in charge of the spinoffs are kind of shitting their pants right now.
I like Jeff have not been to Boston Even though it's easy, it's much easier for me to get there than him.
You've never been there?
I've never been to Boston.
Oh,
Boston is awesome.
And it's on my list, and I kind of hope this show hasn't ruined it for me, where if I go into that museum or the State House, all I'm going to think about now is The Last of Us.
Oh, that'll make it even better.
That's better. Yeah. That's cool. Yeah.
You'd be like, why are the buildings so clean? And
No. Boston is rad, but you'll be so tired of their Paul Revere hard-on by about 2 hours in that you're going to be like, no, please give me some pictures to think about.
I have a restaurant near me that's called Paul Revere Pizza House, and I'm already sick of Paul Revere, so it'll be fun when I go to Boston.
I actually spent 3 years in Boston as a grad student, and I fell in love with the city, and I almost moved back there permanently. I think the really, 4 months of snow in the winter and then the humid summers is what mostly kept me away. But I always like to go back there, and I would love to hang out there with you sometime, Ben. And
oh, I'd love to go
check it out. Yeah,
well, Jason, you and I got to hang out.
That's
there.
That's right. Yeah, so, Walker Stalker,
second Walker Stalker ever.
All right, thanks, Jeff. Here's Jaime from Albuquerque.
Hey, guys. Jaime from Albuquerque calling again on Last of Us. Got to say, another good episode. I know we're all kind of disappointed about the building thing, but the two deaths that they've done so far, for me, have been just slightly better than the game. The game's awesome, but I'll say why. When it comes to Sarah's death, they added a line in there with Joel asking Tommy for help, which to me was a really natural thing to happen. Mm-hmm. And it kind of showed Joel's vulnerability. And that just that hit really hard when he was holding his daughter. And then when it came to Tess, the thing that was really cool, I thought, and again, they added just a line or two or just changed it a little bit. She is the forceful one in this case. Like when she tells Joel, she's like, shut the fuck up, we don't have a lot of time. That's like a really natural thing to me as well. And that part where she asks him, hey, you got to do this for me. I don't ask you for anything. It's like, it just seems like it just, to me, was just like really natural and had more of an impact. And of course we got more time with her, but, anyway, that's just my two cents again. And, we'll be seeing you guys or hearing you guys, and hopefully you get another good episode next week. Thanks.
It's supposed to be one of the better ones next week. That's what the buzz is. You really moved me with that message, because I started thinking about how in the show Tess felt like a mother figure and a guiding figure. Like, Joel is clearly lost still. He's tortured, but Tess was kind of his rock. She was the one who would just kind of shake his shoulders and be like, look, this is the way it is. Get a hold of yourself. Come on, focus. And now she's gone. And so that makes it even more impactful for how is Joel going to function and have to kind of watch, take care of this kid when he's just lost this major figure in his life.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's also an interesting dynamic too, because one of the things that was mentioned before is how Tess was almost the one that was kind of in control of Joel. She was the one that kind of kept him.
Like she told the guy, Robert, something like, he does what I say. And
yeah,
there's some truth to that.
Yeah. And now without
her, she's like the Joel whisperer.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. And now without her, it's going to be interesting to see how that dynamic changes with Joel.
Yeah. And about Tommy too, totally right on with that too. Like, he was the one who, cause Joel, of course, his daughter's dying right before his eyes and he's in deep denial. Like, no, but Tommy knows. And that when he looked at Tommy, and Tommy's like, no, man, that was hard to see. Okay. Final call in this round is Brad Morgan.
Brad here. I just got done watching the second episode from Cleveland, Ohio. Ooh, really good. Those clickers, man. Spot on. I also liked when Ellie went into the hotel. And as an avid gamer and playing the game, she used to do that in the game where she just kind of dip off to the side and like get lost. And Joel would be like, what are you doing? Get over here. That made me giggle a little bit. So I can't wait to see more. I love your guys' podcast, and I can't wait to hear you guys' take on the second episode. Keep up. Bye, y'all.
I think there's a clicker behind him. Thanks, Brad. That was great. Yeah, that's great. Ellie acting like she does in the game. All right. Katie Winterdahl says, I just wanted to write in to say how much I'm loving your podcast on The Last of Us. Thank you. I just finished watching episode 2 and oh my gosh, it was amazing and spooky. I think that the butterfly we see at the beginning of the episode signifies Sarah, and I wonder if we'll see one in each episode. I'll be on butterfly watch. Also, it's so fun to see Bella in such a different role than what I'm used to. Besides Game of Thrones, I know Bella from their roles in Hilda and The Worst Witch. Both kids shows. Oh, I thought that was one name of one show. From Hilda and The Worst Witch. Both kids shows on Netflix. So hearing them say the F word multiple times is so wild to me. The chemistry between Bella and Pedro is incredible. And as a big film and TV music fan, the score of the show is gorgeous. Thank you for all the work you put into your podcast. You're all amazing and insightful and helped me get through a pretty stressful week. I cannot wait to hear what you have to say about this episode. Oh, thank you, man.
Very nice.
Yeah.
Praise Keir. Have you guys seen Severance?
Yeah. Great.
I have not.
I highly recommend it.
It's on my list.
Keir. That's the name here of the person. Last week, I said I'd keep an open mind because I wasn't hooked. Well, they're pulling me in. Yay. First, I'm loving the prologues with their distinct visual and tonal differences from present-day scenes. Episode 1's prologue used a lot of warm tones, the reds and oranges mimicking the scientist's cautionary warning. Episode 2's was washed in cool tones. The blues, the clinical greens mimicked the scientist's message of hopelessness, inevitability, and sorrow. Second, the pacing of this episode worked better for me. There were quiet moments, tension, even times I was holding my breath with fear. Next, Ellie's childlike humor and her curiosity versus moments of being a teenage smartass are slowly growing on me. Last is a pain point I hope doesn't linger the whole season. I just want to see this interesting story unfold, and I might need a little less fan service to really enjoy it. There still are times where I'm taken out of a scene because I felt like I'm in a game. Perhaps it's why I like the cold opens the most, but overall, this is getting good. And Tess, if she's been taken so soon, what's in store for us next? You'll find out.
I'm glad to hear you're coming around. I remember her either boyfriend or husband seemed like he was going to bail after episode 1, but you should try to get him to watch the second one and then decide after that.
Yeah, I agree.
Is my opinion.
Archmaster Rennie. Hi, Rennie. I wanted to weigh in about a couple of issues that keep coming up, a cure and spread. First, both the prologues of episode 1 and 2 had experts saying there is no cure, and some folks had pointed out that antifungals do exist. It is true that there are antifungals, but I do believe they're all topical. That is, you put them on skin, not into your circulatory system through a shot or into your digestive system. I think what the show experts are saying is that there isn't a cure because if you have a systemic cordyceps infection, the only thing strong enough to kill it would also kill the host. As for spread, it makes total sense to me that the contaminated flower would be a great vector. It's what the Indonesian professor calls a substrate for fungal growth. So anyone who handled raw flour could get it. What I don't understand is the show's suggestion that eating cookies or a cake would be a way to get infected, since those have to be baked at 350 to 425 degrees. The show's premise is that cordyceps has adapted to a warmer world so that it can survive in temperatures high enough to allow it to infect a human host. Humans die if their internal temperature rises above 107 or so degrees, and it's all too scarily believable that cordyceps could have adapted to withstand that temperature range. But it's very unlikely that cordyceps would suddenly jump from being able to withstand nothing higher than 94 degrees to being able to withstand 350 degrees. I wish the show or the creators would explain their thinking on this.
I think the explanation is yada, yada, yada.
Well, I mean,
suspension of disbelief.
I also want to say too, that while yes, there were like cooked biscuits and cookies and everything, and we were kind of playing off of that with the Adlers, Mrs. Adler was also baking the cookies herself. So she was interacting with the raw flour.
With the flour, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think the implication was, because they kept showing the guy feeding it to the Nana, that's what did it. But just say, nope, that's not what did it.
Yeah. There was raw flour in the house, so it could have affected
that
way too.
Right. Just in the air, because spores in the air or something like that. But also, you're talking about a cure, the impossibility of a cure because
the cure would kill the host.
Yeah, and so what May was saying is to create a virus that targets the cordyceps in your body. So it's actually,
and then I'll say it happened in 2003. We didn't have the same genetic tools that we have now.
That's true. Yeah, yeah. But that was great. Thank you, Rennie. Erica N. Furter says, I love the cold open. It really added to the world building and continues to be the scariest part of the show so far, in my humble opinion. It feels so real, and that something like this could happen and we would have absolutely no control. I think I may need to look into Atkins. Since the origin of the outbreak has been confirmed to be linked to flour. Or maybe I need help from Ellie since she's lucky enough to eat bread. Oh, that's a good point.
Oh, I didn't even pick
would
up on that.
Would anyone else eat a sandwich in this world?
That's a very nice point.
The acting is incredible. I'm a non-game player, so I'm going in not knowing the relationships or plot. Tessa's end was horrific. And it was so heartbreaking. Her words to Joel were so moving, and I hope he'll have a chance to save who he can save. The suspense and tension throughout, I was holding my breath. I don't think I'll ever recover from Tess's kiss of death. Some things I noticed. The color green, just a few places it was used. The mossy overgrowth that is covering everything inside and outside. The restaurant where Ibu Ratna was eating, and then later when she was talking to the soldier. Nico Parker, who played Sarah, is absolutely gorgeous, and now I know why. She's Thandiwe Newton's daughter. Nico definitely has her mom's acting talents. Yeah, she looks very much like her, too, in my opinion.
Yeah, agreed.
Thanks, Erica.
Wyman Owen says, oh, wow, that was a doozy. Overall, I enjoyed it, but I want to start with my own personal nitpick. Now, I'm totally on board with this being a TV adaptation of a video game. There will be differences between them, new characters, story arcs, situations. I don't think the bit in Jakarta did anything for me to add to the story. Wow. Only thing I got out of it is bomb. Moving on after that, I was in awe. The scenes right out of the game, I won't point them out as I'm sure y'all do that for me, but they were awesome. Don't know Calgary could look so post-apocalyptic. Yeah, I know there's going to be some sets and CGI, but damn. I think for me, the museum was the best part. The introduction of the clickers close-up had me on the edge of my seat as they dragged it out for a few extra minutes to heighten the tension and anxiety. I've played the game now 3 times, and I know when they are coming, but the anxiety still happens. Hell yeah. Lastly, Tess. The events at the Capitol building were incredible and gross. I'm liking the tendrils element for the show, and we didn't get in the game. Super creepy. Side note. I'm all in with Pedro as Joel, Bella as Ellie is taking a little longer, but I'm sure I'll get there. And I, too, did not shit my pants. As always, I love the show and the podcast. Can't wait to hear everyone's thoughts.
Congratulations. I wish I could say the same for my 6-year-old. He's been having a problem lately.
I'm so glad you ended that with my 6-year-old. Because if you ended with, as opposed to myself, I wish I could say the same, it'd be a little weird.
I was honestly hoping it was going to end there.
I got to take a break.
Yeah.
We'll be right back after these messages.
Oh, actually, yesterday I did, in fact, I sneezed so hard I farted. And
sharted. All right.
It was kind of shocking.
All right. I think I'm just going to move on at this point. Jillian Moreau, episode 2 did not disappoint. I think I may have enjoyed it even more than the first one. The tension was incredible. I had to remind myself to breathe during several scenes. Me too. Seeing Boston, a city I visit often, as an overgrown post-apocalyptic setting is pretty surreal. The state building was the most familiar sight to me, as was the skyline and other shots, and it was just so visually stunning and quite terrifying to see it in this way. Although I have not played the game, I assume Tess was not long for the show, given I'm always hearing about Joel and Ellie with no mention of her. So while I wasn't necessarily surprised to see her go, the way it was presented was chilling. That intimate transfer, in quotations, is burned into my brain in the most horrific way. I feel like Ellie and Joel's relationship is well on its way now, and I took the scene of him glancing at his watch to signify that he's thinking about how he wasn't able to protect Sarah, but he won't let that happen again with Ellie.
I don't think he's there yet. I think it's more like, maybe there's some feeling.
Yeah, I agree with that. I don't think he's like, oh, because I mean, he was very hesitant to even continue on, even when they got
he's
to the
ready
house.
To shoot her. Yeah. Yeah.
Or he's like, it's getting kind of late in the day. What time is it? Oh, yeah. Shit, my watch like, is broken. It's been broken for 20 years.
Like, I'm so bored. What time is it?
Yeah.
Jill continues on. These infected runners clickers, is there a difference? Yes, there is. Are absolutely terrifying. The makeup and effects being used are amazing. I actually had my hand up to my face for most of the scenes where our crew was being chased in the museum by them. And I absolutely love how we keep getting more little tidbits of useful information, like the fact that these things can't see, but their hearing is ultra sensitive. Lastly, that cold open was perfect. Getting these little pieces of how, when this all started from different perspectives is being done so well. I hope we continue to see flashbacks like that throughout the season. The terror in that scientist's eyes when she discovered what was happening and the hopelessness she embodies when telling the soldier that the city needed to be bombed, knowing full well that included her and everyone she loves, just struck me as so powerful. Cannot wait for next week. This show means Sundays are appointment TV for me again, and I'm so on board for it.
Yeah, it is good to have a show like that.
And I got to say, thank you, HBO Max, for making it available at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for everyone, because that means Jason and I get to watch it at 6, and
yes.
I'm very happy.
Yeah, I have to watch it at 9, thanks.
Thank you.
I have to wait till 9.
I got to take what I can get.
I'm happy for that. Runners are in an earlier stage of the evolution, and they run, you know? And clickers are when it's like that mushroom thing has overgrown their head, and they start clicking.
And there's something in between.
Is there?
Stalkers.
Yeah.
Stalkers. Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, stalkers are in between. Yeah, I think clickers is just a further, you're further on in the infection.
Yeah.
There's a there's something in game. There's like a little, kind of like the chart that you saw in the first episode of how long each thing is. There is a chart in the game that shows you the evolution of the fungus.
Right.
And it goes from, I'm not going to get into where it goes. But
right.
It goes.
And she mentioned like that she knew Tess wasn't long for this world because she kept hearing about Joel and Ellie. When we were doing the intro for this, we should have just been talking about Joel, Ellie, and Tess all the time. Just to fuck with people.
Just to throw people off.
That Tess, man, can't believe her.
Well, when David and Ellie are on their journey, yes. Yeah,
Sadie Wright says, this show is so amazing. Visually, every scene is stunning. The light coming through the roof onto Ellie at the start of the episode, where at first it looks like she's outside sleeping in a meadow. Just gorgeous. Yeah, I agree. And they particularly lit up that sandwich, I think, on purpose, like just to emphasize how great it was. And anyone notice the butterfly? Wonder if that will be a theme going forward. Seems like it. Episode 1 was great, pulled me right in and was intense, creepy, heartbreaking. But oh my God, episode 2 was proper terrifying. The stakes are so much higher in The Last of Us versus The Walking Dead. The clickers in the hotel had me so tense, my husband had to remind me to breathe. That seems to be a theme. I love Bella Ramsey's Ellie and Pedro Pascal's Joel. Ellie in the hotel lobby with her snark, have you heard of books? When she's wading in the water, so excited. This is so gross. I bought the game when it first came out for my husband and have seen little bits of gameplay over the years. Mostly when he's like, look at the light in the scene. It is beautiful. The production value of the show is top-notch, just like the game. Every scene is gorgeous. Oh, Tess, when Ellie noticed she was bitten, it reminded me of Eugene and Rosita. Her death was so intimate. It was beautiful and terrible and scary, and I can't get that image out of my head. Clicking the Zippo, I really didn't know if she'd get it lit. Like, I know that's often a trope to finally get it lit last second, but I didn't feel like one. It didn't feel like one here. I started thinking the same thing, like, is she actually going to get it or not? Joel realizing he can't save Tess, heartbreaking. Save who you can. Wow. I can't wait for next Sunday, but I'm also bummed to only have 9 episodes. I want to savor every moment of this show. Side note, hubby is a chef and wondered if the show will affect mushroom sales. LOL. I mean, I've never been a huge fan of them to begin with, and I'm not really feeling like I need to have them anytime soon.
That's hilarious.
I'm not a mushroom fan either, and I don't think this is going to turn me on to them anytime soon.
This is hilarious. I used to really dislike mushrooms and I've been growing to really like them lately. And it is coinciding now with this and it's making me chuckle to the point where for my birthday, which is coming up, my wife's birthday is coming up as well. We're giving each other a gift of this mushroom foraging trip in February up near Jenner, and it's with this mycologist who's also a chef, and she's going to prepare all these things with the mushrooms we find. And I'm all excited about it. It's coinciding with this just beautifully.
That's cool. You know, I just realized Jenny and I are doing a mushroom foraging thing too. I wonder if, I don't think it's the same one, but it's on the calendar.
Wild About Mushrooms is the group okay. that we're doing.
That's yeah. interesting. Real quick, too, before we move on to the next one, I think it was you, Eric, that mentioned it, the Easter egg about the Zippo lighter.
No, no, somebody else mentioned that, but it was, yeah.
Oh, was it you, Jason? I looked for it, James. And I couldn't see it.
I read it, so who knows, okay. maybe. It was from the internet.
Because I kept trying to look, at the lighter during my second view. I'm like, I don't see it.
I think it was actually Neil Druckmann's Twitter. Someone asked him, or he mentioned that the production department asked him if they wanted anything special for Tess's lighter, and he said, make it look like somebody's Sam's. Lighter.
Sam.
Sam's lighter from yeah.
Nathan's brother.
Last of Us. I mean,
yeah, Nathan's brother.
Uncharted
yeah.
4.
Okay.
It's got a star on it, but yeah, I don't know.
I was just curious because I looked at it and I didn't see a good enough shot to notice.
Maybe there wasn't a good enough shot. Yeah, yeah. So it was just, now we know it was there, but you couldn't see it.
They cut out the scene where she looks at her lighter and says, wow, this reminds me so much of Sam's lighter from Uncharted
4. Or if she's like, my good buddy Sam gave me this.
Yeah, there you go.
That scene must have just hit the cutting room floor and I missed it. It's all right.
Perhaps. All righty. Brian Henshaw, you're suggested in episode 500 of your podcast that raisin cookies may be a partial cause of the fungal apocalypse is wrong-headed and legally actionable. Further slander of this sort may result in a visit from a Purple Californian Cartoon soul group from 1980s commercials, and we know the 80s means danger. There are a few better treats than a crinkly, buttery, ever-so-caramelized oatmeal raisin cookie, and you'd be the cookie with oats, not cordyceps-infected wheat flour. Looking forward to future episodes with fairer treatment of innocent, sun-dried grapes. Cheers to all, Brian H., sun-made in America.
That's well, fantastic.
To that, I would just say, you know who else loves oatmeal raisin cookies? Adolf Hitler. Just think about that.
I did not know that, and I don't know if I needed to know that.
No, I'm pretty sure that's not true, because I love oatmeal raisin cookies.
So. Oh. All right. muting Eric. No, I'm just kidding.
Oh, man. Oh, God. All right.
Finally. Brian actually was my roommate when I was in grad school in Boston, by the way.
Oh, right on.
Oh, fun. Okay. Did you guys eat a lot of oatmeal raisin cookies when you lived together?
Every day, yeah, all okay. the time. He was always eating raisins.
God, it's not often you get to hear about the California raisins either in a podcast. I actually remember using having a toy of that where you push the button and they danced to that song. All right. Anyway, finally, the final of the written-in feedback comes from Evan Shapiro, and he starts, Dear Fungus Bigots, I really can't abide the one-sided approach to The Last of Us. Oh no, the cordyceps is taking over my mind, and beware the evil fungi. Why you gotta be a hater? A fungus gotta do what a fungus gotta do. It's not like it's creating undead or rage virus zombies. Think about it. What has a virus or necromancy ever done for you except the years of isolation? Thanks, COVID. But fungus, that's a different story. Perhaps you don't like beer or bread, cheese, wine, penicillin.
Penicillin.
Mold.
Psilocybin.
Psilocybin. Truffles, whiskey.
Hate truffles.
Well, I do.
I love truffles. Yummy.
And I don't appreciate the unbalanced resentment against the fungus. You can hide in your federal quarantine zone, but not me. I'm going to sit and enjoy a fine scotch with aged Gouda and some sourdough while I await the fungal nirvana. Take me, cordyceps, to my fever dreams of yeasty delight.
Yeasty.
The world of plants and animals is over. Viva la mycelium. Don't, or actually do, get bit. We'll be waiting for you.
Oh, my God.
We've been summoned to the... Great.
That might have been one of my favorite pieces of feedback.
I think this may be my favorite letter we've ever gotten any time ever.
Fungus bigots.
I'm sorry, man. You're right. You're totally right.
Thanks, Evan. That was great.
All right. We got three more calls. Here's Jim Pete.
Hi, this is Jim from Raleigh. This is my second week in a row after 12 years of never sending anything in. But if The Last of Us continues to be this good. I'm just going to keep sending in audio. The show is so good. It took it to another level, I think, in week two. I'm really happy if what you said was true last week, Jason, that if they originally took the episode two and combined it into episode one. I'm glad they did that because, while I don't know that it made episode one better, I think it bridged episode one to episode two better, because episode one, the first 35 to 40 minutes still stand out to me. Even though for sure, the second half of the show was a bit slower until the end, I think that it just made an overall better episode one, episode two, because episode two from the beginning to the end was just amazing. The visuals of the city when they first walk in was just brilliant. The buildings leaning into each other, walking to the hotel and you hear the scream and then the crow again, those sound effects, the crow forewarning what's to come, the hotel with the piano. You get that one brief scene in the hotel where she's flipping that knife. It wasn't in the hotel. It was earlier. She's flipping that knife and Joel has that first little bit of admiration for her. I love that so much. Mm-hmm. But the museum, oh, the museum was spectacular. Mm-hmm. And you know, just how creepy is this place with the fungus, just everywhere. It's just so absolutely scary. The cordyceps just everywhere. It's, oh my gosh, the designers of these sets, should win every award. But the scene upstairs in the museum where that reminds me so much of Jurassic Park 1 when they're in the kitchen with the velociraptors, except for in this case, we don't have the metal cabinets. We can see where they are in the they're already scary enough, these clickers, but you see them through these windows and it sort of even warps them even more. And the way that they move, my gosh, can you win like awards for being infected actors, for being Zed actors? Because these two clickers were extraordinary. I can't wait till they do interviews with these people. Because, oh my gosh, that was spectacular. They get to the top though, and I think the subtle moment that I love the most was between Joel and Ellie when she looks out over the town and he makes a comment to her, but she replies back to him, but you can't deny this view. That she's hopeful. And of course she should be, because I think she feels a little bit indestructible, but he gives her two glances in that moment that are beyond respect. He starts to, you can see that there's a little more emotion there. And again, I love seeing Pedro Pascal get to emote in this. And then of course, that subtle look at his watch as he starts connecting Ellie to Sarah. Anna Torv. No, I guess I should have seen that coming, but I will always have Mindhunters and Fringe. And gosh, this fungus communicates like the Borg, which is awesome. I love the Borg. They're my favorite part of Star Trek Next Generation. Those episodes were absolutely phenomenal. All right, I'm going to stop there. I hope I didn't go over the time. Well, I went over the 1 minute 30 seconds that I promised last week, so I apologize, but I just love so much about this show. I'm going to end it there. I can't wait to hear the podcast. Love you guys. You do an amazing job, and I'll see you next week. Peace.
Thanks, Jim. It's good to hear your excitement.
Peace.
I the Borg's my favorite. I know what episodes he's talking about. It's the one where Picard has
Locutus of Borg.
Yeah.
Yes.
So good. Anna Torv, hopefully they'll do some flashbacks with her and she'll be around a little bit more. And he mentioned watching Pedro Pascal emote. And I was reading they, you know, picked him because they wanted someone who could play tough but who could also be vulnerable and show a full range of emotions. So,
well, yeah. I mean, I love the realism that they're adding to it too. Like Tess makes the comment like after they walked like 10 flights up to the hotel and she's like, well, yeah, like if you had the knees that we have. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, you see Joel still like they don't brush off his hand after punching that guy, like they focus on how painful it is. So they're keeping mm-hmm. the injuries more realistic, which is I'm happy that they're doing as well.
Oh, I literally felt that knees comment.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I agree. I like that too. All right. Next is Archmaester Rennie.
Wow. This show is terrifying and it has got me paranoid about fungus. After tonight's episode, I pulled some leftover chicken out of the refrigerator that had been in there too long, and when I opened it up and saw the mold growing on it, I slammed the lid back on it and took it out in the backyard as fast as I could and got a flamethrower and torched it, because it's the only way to make it work. Exciting episode. Looking forward to hearing you talk about it.
What did Rima posted something in the chat about this woman hitting a mushroom with a baseball bat over and over or something in her backyard. Final call is from our friend Kara.
Hey guys, it's Kara. I just finished watching episode 2 of The Last of Us and wanted to call in immediately with a couple of my thoughts. The first thing I wanted to talk about, how about that cold open? That was chilling on a whole other level, and I kept expecting the dead woman on the table to pop up at some point, but I'm super glad that didn't happen. The one thing that stuck out to me is the professor of mycology mentioning that flour would be the perfect substrate. I'm assuming that has to do with yeast as a fungus somehow relating to cordyceps being able to survive in humans, and would explain all the mentions to baked goods in the first episode if flour contamination is how the fungus initially spread. The other thing I wanted to mention was how much I'm loving this chemistry and banter between Bella Ramsey and Pedro Pascal. They're already so entertaining to watch, and I feel like Joel is already starting to care for Ellie. I don't think it's a coincidence that he glanced at his watch right before they climbed down the ladder to head to the Capitol, after he kind of stood there with Ellie and had a little bit of a moment, or I might just be having some wishful thinking, but I can't wait to see how that develops over the course of the season. The other thing I wanted to ask about is, for those of you that have played the game, in terms of the clickers, are they using echolocation? Because I know Joel said that they can see, but they can't hear. And the way that they're clicking and tilting their heads and their movements makes it seem like it's specifically echolocation. So I wanted to see if I was super far off on that, or if that's basically canon in the game. And finally, how can you not think of Vecna and the hive mind and the upside down with this mention of the chemical connection and communication of the cordyceps with the infected all over the city? That is an extra layer of terrifying that I was not ready for. And I basically, I can't wait until the rest of the episodes. Thanks, guys.
I just keep listening to the background sound. She's got, there's a dog barking, and I can't help but think of Mercy, the dog. You know, you better go look around, Kara, and see what's going on out there.
Yeah, I mean, in terms, we kind of discussed it already, that, yeah, they're definitely using echolocation.
Yeah. And I want to say, hear but not see but not hear.
Yeah, I heard that too. I figure she might have just had it confused.
Flipped him backwards.
But I want to say too, in addition to thanking Kara for the voicemail, the podcast that you did of the Zedhead show with her on crime and serial killer shows and movies was fantastic.
Yeah.
It was so great listening to her talking about that.
Yeah. She, if you go, go subscribe to our House Podcastica podcast. I put that episode up there, even though usually it's Patreon exclusive, because I thought it was so good. And one of the highlights was that Kara took a profiling class from John Douglas, who was one of the first FBI serial killer profiles. And he was the inspiration for Jonathan Groff's character in the awesome Netflix Mindhunter series. So she got to take a seminar and have some interactions with him. She talked about it on the podcast. Pretty great.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That was a great episode.
Thank you. All right. That is it. Thank you so much for calling in, everybody. That was fantastic. Really enjoying doing these feedback shows.
Yeah. And if you want to write in or leave us a message, you can find all our contact information at podcastica.com.
And while you're there, you can be sure to check out all of the other shows Podcastica has to offer.
Like one that you're doing, which is
The Revisited podcast with, I mentioned Kristen and I that did the live react. Kristen and I do a podcast together. Was formerly, we have to go back, Lost Revisited, but we've since changed it to The Revisited podcast so that we can cover other shows in the future. But right now we are still covering Lost, and we are right now at, we're at the beginning of, towards the beginning of season five. Season five, episode six is out, and we're getting ready. This coming Monday will be season five, episode seven, The Life and Death of Jeremy Bentham.
Ooh.
Which is such a great episode. It's a great really episode.
Another podcast coming up soon. Actually, it's a show that that's out today on Peacock called Poker Face. It's a Rian Johnson written and directed mystery of the week show. And it stars Natasha Lyonne as this, I don't know if she's a detective or what, but she solves mysteries and she has this uncanny ability to know whether someone is lying or not. And it has a great like roster of guest stars. And I wish I had that list in front of me because the only one I can think of is Adrian Brody. And also the guy who played, he was in... What's the Coen Brothers movie with George Clooney?
Oh, Brother, Where Art Thou?
He's like the third goofy one,
Tim Blake Nelson.
There's a bunch of other ones. Anyway, I'm not doing a very good job of selling this, but it's an interesting show. It's like a throwback to Mystery of the Week, but with Rian Johnson at the helm. Poker Face.
Shit, did you guys see Guillermo del Toro's Cabinet of Curiosities?
No, I want to watch that. I know Andrew
Tim
Lincoln's
Blake Nelson is in an episode of that, and it's really good. Those are amazing episodes. Highly recommend the show.
Cool. Yeah. Right on. Well, next episode of this podcast will be The Last of Us Season 1, Episode 3, Long, Long Time. I'm totally looking forward to that. I'll say this episode is made possible by Patreon supporters like Vicky Stepetic, who've pledged their support at patreon.com/JasonCabassi. So thanks so much to Vicky. If you guys go check that out, you'll see there's a bunch of great perks and stuff, and you can help support the podcasting. All right, that is our show.
Thanks for listening.
Don't get bit, Brian Hinshaw. Rawr.